Welcome to episode 7 of the Traveling Mages, your show focusing on the magic lifestyle, current magic news, and anything else we come up with. I'm your host, Jose Lee, and joining me in the line are returning hosts, William Beversleys, the Asian sensation, Chris Kuya, the Incredible Hulk himself, Dan Galagak.
Hey.
Joining us for the first time is Harold Wheeler from South Korea.
Hey, what's up?
And returning from Pro Tour Concert Tarkir is Randy Gay.
Hey, how's it going?
Randy, how was the trip?
Pretty awesome. It was my first Pro Tour, and it went pretty well. Not as well as it could have gone, but I mean, it was in Hawaii, so I had a great time and met some really cool people. Definitely got some good stories to come back with.
Okay, now I can definitely hear something in the background. Are you driving right now?
Yeah.
So where are you driving to?
We're actually on the way to Fort Worth right now. There's some good evidence that I didn't do super well at the Pro Tour because we're on the way to a BTQ up in North Texas. So hoping to get back for Washington, D.C.
So you're in a PTQ. Are you with a bunch of guys? You're in a group?
Yeah, I got some other my friends in the car here. I got Adam and Dan. I don't think they're going to be able to really chime in too much just because of the noise in the car. I've got to hold this up to my my head. But yeah, just traveling with some friends to a BT.
All right, cool, cool. So how did it feel to be there for the first time?
It was really something else. Like, I mean, you get used to the kind of local meta that you're at, and the same faces pretty much over and over again at your local PTQs. And then you go to a Pro Tour and you see, you know, Luis Scott Vargas and, you know, Huey Jensen and all these people that you just see on camera on, you know, on the internet, and people that are, you know, running the drafts and constructed tournaments that you watch online all the time, and they're there and you're playing against them, and you have the opportunity to go up and talk to them, and most of them are really cool. So just getting the chance to play like on a higher level and see new faces and see recognizable faces is really, really awesome.
Awesome. How did the draft go?
The draft was pretty good for me. My day one draft was pretty solid. I stayed open as long as I could. Ended up with kind of a green, black, splash, white. Was low on my creature count, but had some really solid creatures and a really solid removal suite. So won my first round. Ended up getting paired up against Martin Yuza in round two. Lost game one to him. Ended up pulling it out in games two and three. Game three was really, really interesting because we just had this really crazy board stall forever. But at that point, he was at, I think, like four life or something. But I couldn't profitably attack for a while. So eventually kind of saw an opening when he attacked with his 2-1 flyer and took the chance and ended up not winning that turn, but squeezing through another 2 damage and making some solid trades and ended up taking down the match like in 2 turns maybe. And he had to rack his brain for a little bit to figure out like what he should have done differently, and he realized he shouldn't have attacked with that flyer, and like ended up kind of yelling at his friend for a little bit after that. So that was interesting, being like a platinum pro in round 2 of the Pro Tour, my first time ever. Ended up losing in round 3 to Huey Jensen for the finals of the draft pod.
That's cool.
But yeah, he really crushed me pretty bad, but mostly just because I was light on creatures and he blew me out with dead drop 2 games in a row. So I mean, I guess that'll happen.
Awesome. Now, how was the rest of the tournament?
So the rest of the tournament didn't go quite as well. Like I said, I was 2-1 in my first draft pod, and then ended up going 2-3 in standard. I did start off 3-1 though, which was pretty great. My first round of standard was against Shuhei Nakamura, who obviously is a Hall of Famer, really, really good player. He was playing a really insane, like, 4-color Soul of Theros mid-range beatdown kind of deck, and it was really interesting how he built it. And he ended up kind of just having all these dorks and a Soul of Theros with like 12 mana out and would just be activating Soul of Theros twice a turn. So he was gaining, you know, 25, 30 life a turn. And I was actually able to stabilize and with like an Elspeth, some monstrous Fleecemane Lions. I played Abzan, by the way, and just stabilized. And he eventually got up to 142 life and then scooped because there were 12 minutes left in the round. And I was about to ult Elspeth with about 20 tokens on the board. So I beat a Hall of Famer in round 4.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now, which version of Abzan did you run?
I'd say it was like kind of in between the aggro and the Planeswalker deck. I decided I didn't like Sorin or Ajani all that much, which was, in retrospect, probably wrong. Mine was kind of running the Fleecemanes and the Brumazes, but still running some Elspeths and Siege Rhinos and Wingmate Rocks, as you would expect. And obviously, like, the Corsair Carried combo.
So you're all over Abzan then, not just aggro or midrange?
Yeah, it was somewhere in between. I liked it. It was pretty consistent and kind of had a good match, like an okay matchup against everyone except for Devotion. So I still think it was a pretty good choice, and I think I built it pretty well. Like, even now, like, I still kind of stand behind my choice.
Yeah, so let's talk about the field. We saw Abzan in top eight. We saw the Jeskai wins. We did see one blue-black, and I think, what is it, Jeskai Ascendancy made it into top eight, too. Now, those are the big decks that everybody saw, but what were the other decks? The decks that maybe didn't make the top eight, but are probably going to be good contenders in the metagame. They just didn't make it for some reason. Is there any other decks that stood out to you? I know some of the Star City guys have been talking about some of the decks they took, like a red-white aggro deck and other types of decks out there that maybe never made coverage, but have the potential of possibly dominating Standard in the future. What did you see?
I think there are some aggro decks that are good. I don't think the top eight is very representative of where aggro is. I think it'll find a way to squeeze through at some point and make things really difficult for someone. I think that's also going to depend on a slight metagame shift towards like bigger mid range. I think people are trying to win the Abzan mirror, so that's why they're running all the planeswalkers. And I think those kind of decks are going to have trouble with the super fast aggro decks. I actually lost to Tomohiro Saito in round. What was it, eight? And he was running just straight mono red. And I just never got to my Drowning Sorrows, so I lost the match. And that could definitely happen.
Was it like a boss slide build, you know, where he goes wide with a bunch of little goblins? Or
Yeah, definitely something like that. I mean, with, you know, Crow and Crusaders and Rabble Masters and the like.
See, that's what I'm thinking about running for games day.
Yeah, I mean, definitely for a local meta, I'd say it would be pretty good, because everyone's going to just be copying the Pro Tour decks. I don't think the blue-black control deck can stand up to it at all, Abzan would have trouble with it if they're not able to pop off a Drowning Sorrow. I think as long as you're able to play around that a little bit, that card specifically, then you should be able to do pretty well with it. However, I probably wouldn't advise like the straight mono red. I think some of the heroic builds, like Tom Ross's deck, looks okay. The blue-white heroic looks pretty solid, in my opinion.
You know, I've been playing that blue-white heroic deck, and I've been playing it for about a week and a half now, and it's really cool. The thing I don't like about it, though, is that it's so all your eggs in one basket.
Right. It also seems like that kind of deck can kind of draw the wrong half. All your enchantments and spells and then turn four, finally draw your creatures, and seems like it can be kind of backwards sometimes.
And that's happened to me a lot, too, because I was playing Tom Ross's exact list that he posted on Star City. And you're right. It draws all the wrong things at the wrong time sometimes. And then it seems to be a little mana short. I'm considering adding one or two extra lands, because Mana Screw seems to be a very constant thing with that deck. But what I have found the key to it is drawing cards. If you can keep drawing cards through or the Alathasa or some of your other spells out there, then that thing's on fire. So it's a pretty fun deck to play, but it does feel all eggs in one basket.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know for sure that like the aggro deck has been found, but I'm quite sure that there is one. I think it's going to take some time to really figure out what the best one is. I can't actually remember. Were there any Devotion decks in the top eight?
I don't recall any. Does anybody recall any? That's I think there was
dancing. No,
I think it was Abzan and all that stuff.
Yeah.
There was no devotion for
there was around. There was a three Jeskai, there was a three Abzan, and there was the Ascendancy combo, and the other one was
blue black
control.
Okay,
I definitely think that Devotion is a contender, just because like Abzan has basically no way to deal with it. It forces Abzan to run like End Hostilities in the sideboard, and like they're trying to run Dune Blast, but really like by turn four or five, like Devotion has already gone off and probably just wrecked you, which was the case with me. Like I couldn't even get to End Hostilities fast enough sometimes, so I lost to that in two separate rounds, and I'm pretty surprised that I didn't top eight actually.
Okay, awesome. So you definitely made day two.
I did. I actually went 4-4 on both days.
So how did that feel?
Pretty much right in between good and bad. Like, I was able to kind of prove to myself that I belong on the Pro Tour, that I can compete, but it wasn't good enough for cashing, so definitely didn't walk away with anything material.
Right.
So that kind of sucks, but it felt okay. Like, I'm proud of my results, considering it was my first Pro Tour, but nowhere near satisfied, because I definitely had higher expectations for myself.
Cool, cool. Now, on the last interview, I think it was with Brian Brandewin, we talked about using the Pro Tour and getting exposed, and then all of a sudden you get all this attention, and then you just kind of everything avalanches from there. Did you make any good connections, or you get any team offers or anything like that?
No, nothing like that, really. I chatted with a couple people, but nothing crazy.
All right. About the standard metagame, where do you think it's going in the future?
I mean, I think the Abzan deck is really good. I think that's going to continue to be a contender. A good friend of mine who's also been on the Pro Tour actually says that Abzan is the only Tier 1 deck right now. So I think the metagame is just going to be kind of revolved around that for a little while. And I think you're either playing that or you're playing to beat it. Because even like the Jeskai deck, which is also very good, kind of inherently has some issues with Abzan. Like a lot of the cards just don't match up that well with it. You need like a good sequence of cards to actually get past, you know, the average Abzan hand. So
yeah, it just feels it feels like if the mid-range Abzan deck curves out, Jeskai can't possibly compete.
Right, or if you have any kind of life gain, like
yeah, you cast a Seed Rhino.
You could like Siege Reiner into Sorin, and Jeskai really can't do anything. So, yeah, I think you kind of just have to hope for the best there. Jeskai already kind of adapted a little bit by running the 4 Hushwing Griff main, so that's kind of like some evidence of people starting to tune around Abzan, because that is a very powerful card in the matchup. I think it's going to take a little bit more to knock Abzan off of the top seat.
So Corsair, in or out? It seems like some of the decks are just go ahead and completely removing Corsair Crew Fix in favor of, especially the more aggro build, especially in favor of Fleece Mane Lion or was it Rexxas the Death Dealer. Do you see a good future for Corsair in Standard, or do you think it's going to go away?
It definitely depends on what kind of deck you're playing. Like, yeah, if you're playing the aggro deck or, you know, any kind of aggressive deck like that, like, you don't really need Corsair. But anything that wants to dirtle a little bit and then just, like, drop a big threat, obviously, like, Corsair's really amazing. Any deck that wants to play from or wants to be able to play from behind needs Corsair, and that's, you know, the Abzan midrange or Devotion likes it, obviously, just because it's double green, if nothing else. Yeah, Corsair is definitely the way to go. It is as good as people say it is. And it's kind of weird because, like, it's almost subtle when it's on the board, like its impact. But you actually do have to kill it as soon as possible because, like, it will create such an advantage in the long term that it can almost, like, it'll, from kind of behind the scenes, to win the game, you know?
Yeah, the life gain is no joke.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, since we're talking about Corsair, let's talk about one of your, I guess, pet decks or one of your favorite decks. Let's talk about Jund. There's recently been talks among some of the people that like to write articles in the community saying that cards like Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time, they provide such a huge card advantage in Modern that grindy decks like Jund that just rely on top decking better than you can't possibly compete, because your opponent is always going to have more cards than you. How do you feel about that?
I'm not sure. I definitely haven't gotten to play any Modern since Cons came out, so it's hard to comment on that. But one thing I've learned about Jund is that it's probably never going to go away. it's such a good archetype, and it's such a good deck that I think it can adapt. Really, like, if anything, my at least initial kind of analysis of that would be that cards like Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise are maybe putting the blue decks closer to the same level as Jund, because for the most part, like, those decks are, you know, have a lot of trouble with Jund as it is, because, like, you're playing blue, and, like, often you can actually just get out card advantage by Jund with, you know, Dark Confidants and Coursers and cards like that, so to set up some advantage. I definitely still think that Jund can grind out just about any other opponent, but, you know, don't take my word on it, because I haven't actually done any testing yet with the new cards.
Okay, cool. Now, Dan, I know we were talking about brewing Jund for Standard. How do you feel about that, Dan? You have any more tech for that? I know we're talking about Corsair. We're talking about some of the other stuff.
You know, with Jund, it has so many great cards that you can play. You know, obviously Corsair being one of them. That's going to be the one card with your green in that deck, because you want to still, like Randy was saying, you want to still have that ability to gain advantage from behind. Obviously, Corsair being the one card, and especially if you're going to play Jund in the deck, that's going to allow you to do that, because we really don't, in green base deck, well, basically green, we don't have much draw ability. But you still got powerful cards that you can play right now. Chandra being one of them, simple 4-drop that allows you to gain advantage, that zero ability. to play off the top of the deck, being able to play an extra land. I mean, it just, you got Storm Breath Dragon, which I still believe is good. I mean, 4/4 Haster with flying and it protection white. You got Sarkhan, which is Sarkhan Vaal, which basically he's just broken right now. I mean, you got to deal with on the first turn he comes out a 4/4 flyer with indestructibility, and you really can't. Like yesterday, I was playtesting with one of our local players here, and he thought that, I mean, it's a basic mistake. My bad, a basic mistake, but. You know, he tried to play Stoke the Flames on the Sarkhan, and I was just like, you can't do that before I can activate the abilities. I mean, it's something you got to know as a newer player. But like I said, so many good cards, and especially removal as well. By the way, Randy, what do you think about the 5 casting cost removal for black that destroys all non-enchantment creatures?
Oh, Extinguish All Hope?
Yes.
Oh, Extinguish All Hope. Sorry, you have to remind me on the actual... Oracle on that card.
It's a destroy all non-enchantment creatures.
And how much does it cost?
It's actually six mana. Yeah, it's six mana.
Blue Black was playing the Vault, I believe, right? As a removal.
Yeah, Perilous Vault. Vault.
Yeah, and then I was like, well, I mean, I saw Extinguish, and I was like, well, I know it casts. I mean, you got to cast it for one more, but Blue Black being such a basic, you know, two color deck, as Black being a removal color. I was like, maybe someone can brew it to where that Extinguish All Hope would be good. Because, I mean, how much enchantment are you really using in a blue-black deck?
I don't know if I like the card. Six is a lot for a sweeper. Like, five's already a lot for a sweeper. And,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's kind of the cards we're being dealt with.
I mean, I wouldn't be that surprised if it's... Yeah, I wouldn't be too surprised if it came up, but I don't know.
I mean, I just don't like the blue black deck at all. Like it just seems like they're forcing it, you know. I mean, it did really well. I mean, it did put up numbers, but I wasn't super impressed with it.
It does feel a little forced.
Yeah, before Ivan Flock went into the top 8, they asked him how he was going to do, and he's like, "Oh, I'm probably going to lose because my deck sucks." So that should say something.
Well, and the fact that it was even Flock playing it, that's like Waffle Tapa, you know. When they play it, you're just like, that's not the optimal build. It's just that player's playing to his strengths. You know, when Craig Wesco, you say, you know, that's probably not the optimal white weenie build, but oh, what the hell, it's Craig Wesco.
I think the reason they did so well was their play skill, not their deck. I mean,
Then again, did you see how Pearl Lake Ancient took over games with, watching Pearl Lake Ancient come down and just dodge removal, just like how Aetherling used to, and bring back lands that gain you life? It is just nasty.
Yeah, that
Pearl Lake
true.
Ancient's really great.
What was that, Andy?
I was just saying I definitely prefer the build with Pearl Lake Ancient over the Prognostic Sphinx build. I've been playing a little bit with...
Or I think we just lost him.
Oh no!
Did it cut out?
Yeah.
Wait, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah, there he is.
If I cut out again, I'm probably just gonna head out. We're getting in the middle of like actual nowhere. So
okay,
cell towers are pretty non-existent.
You didn't hear all the talked about. You're right.
This guy.
Okay. Anyway, so just go back to the Prognostic Sphinx.
Okay. So I've actually been informed that my good friend Adam, that's driving the car right now, actually speculated and bought like 80 of them. and in retrospect, I think that was the wrong call because I think the build with just two Pearl Lake Ancients as the only win condition in the main board is probably better.
Now the question is, what did he buy at?
Yeah, how much did you buy them for, Adam? 40 cents a piece.
Well, you know, you can congratulate them that they're at $1 on TCG Player now.
Yeah, definitely a really great investment.
He just doubled his money. I mean, how many investments can say that?
You doubled your money. That's pretty good.
I mean, I'm wrong.
But yeah, I just don't think the draw to that deck is that it doesn't have to tap out. So if you have to, you know, tap 5 mana to play a creature that, you know, it's probably going to end up having to block for a few turns. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of it. I definitely like Pearl Lake Ancient because you just get to the point where you've, you know, exhausted your opponent's resources. You have like 7 cards in your hand because you cast, you know, a Treasure Cruise or a Dig
kind of reminds me of one of the players that we play with here. Like, he was so adamant about Prophet of Crucifix being good. Like, when Theros came out, he just bought as many as he could.
That's bad. Well, it looks like Randy's about to fall off the call because he is on his way to a PTQ in Fort Worth. And that's, anybody that knows Texas will know that the power of the country, there's not a lot of cell phone towers on there. So we're going to go ahead and move on. Yep, that's him. He just dropped off. So we're going to go ahead and move on. So, guys, what are you planning to do with the rest of the standard season now? Now that we have some of the decks stabilizing, we have some decks that we can attack, we have some decks that we can net deck. What are your plans?
Honestly, I think I'm just going to – I mean, right now I have a couple of the tiery kind of decks, like type decks. Like, I'm to the point now where I'm not going to build, like, the exact 75s, especially for standard, because I don't think it's right. I don't think – the Pro Tour didn't really teach us that much. It taught us that the combo deck was a real thing. There is a blue-black control deck, and Jeskai and, you know, Abzan are probably, you know, the decks to beat in the format, which I think we already knew. Like, through all the events that came before it, you know, all the stuff on Moto and the Star City Games tournaments, like, it showed us that, like, these are the decks you need to beat or play. So, I mean, I think there's plenty of decks out there right now. I mean, I've been rocking this black, and I actually bought it. I spent like $200 on Moto and put the exact 75 together with this blue-black mid-range, or not blue-black, this red-black mid-range deck. It's a lot of fun. Like, it definitely has some issues. Like, I figured Abzan would be one of my better matchups, but it seems to be kind of, you know, like, it seems like it's always a top deck war, and I end up, it's like a 50-50, I think, but surprisingly good against the aggro decks, mostly because of my sideboard. But I think that the format is still wide open. Like, there's still decks that can break out and do stuff.
All right. How is that deck set up?
Basically, I play, like, 4 Thoughtseize, 1 Despise in the main, 4 Brain Maggots. And this was actually, I got the idea from one of Todd Anderson's videos, but we ended up changing it because what happens is you're just kind of, like, left on the field with a Brain Maggot. So I added, like, Herald of Torments, we took out the lightning strikes for magma jets to create more card advantage, and it plays 4 Sign and Blood, so you can literally draw a bunch of cards, which I love drawing cards.
Yeah,
I'd also play Sarkhan, Ashcloud Phoenix, and Goblin Rabble Master, which Ashcloud Phoenix is like my favorite card in the set now. This thing's so hard to kill. It's a 4/1. You can just block with it, and just, you know, whatever they. It's always a 2/1 unless they got, like, you know, actual, you know, like, remove from the game removal. But even then, it's still like, you got my Ashcloud Phoenix, here's a Sarkhan. Like,
well, let me get this straight. With Ashcloud Phoenix, it just keeps coming back, right?
Yes.
Because as long as you don't kill the morph.
Yeah, if it's morphed and it dies, it doesn't come back. But if you kill it face up, it goes face down. And then they have to basically spend another entire removal spell to kill the morph while it's dead. Or you can just remove it from the game. But, I mean, still, it's for the most part, it's like a 2/1. And the deck I made is kind of designed, it's basically 1/1s and 2/1s. And then, like, you know, some like Herald of Torments for, you know, as like meat, or, you know, like basically cards like Rabblemaster and Herald of Torment, they can, you know, take over a game by themselves sometimes. And sometimes you get to bestow a Rabblemaster with a Herald of Torment and look at your opponent's face and they're kind of sad.
Hey, are you running Thoughtseize in the main?
Yeah, 4. And 1 Despise.
That was another thing that I was pretty much like, if you went Jund, right now, if you're playing black at all in this format, 4 Thoughtseize is the way to go. I mean, look at what Ari Lax did with his Abzan. Yeah. And he just was like, I'm jamming 4 Thoughtseize in the main, and it worked.
Yeah, it's still one of the best cards of standard. And, of all time.
And there was a lot of rumblings. A lot of people were unsure if 4 Thoughtseize was the way to go because of the pain lands. I mean, there's so many ways of losing life through your mana that a lot of people were actually concerned about Thoughtseize. But apparently, no, it's still a thing.
The mana bases are starting to get better and less painful.
And then in the case of Abzan, I mean, you have lots of ways to gain life. You have the Courser, you have Sorin, Season Rhino, and Wingmate Rock. Those all gain you more life that you'll probably lose from Thoughtseize.
Plus, I mean, like, turn 1, would you, like, honestly, like, so if you play your Painline and your Thoughtseize and you take 3, and then you take a Siege Rhino from their hand, you kind of break even, because, like, they're going to cast that eventually, and then you lose 3 life, and then they have a Siege Rhino in play. I mean, it all depends. I mean, it's a necessary evil for a lot of these black decks to, and it's sad. I mean, like I said, I've, you know, the Abzan deck top decks really well. I mean, it's kind of like the new Jund to the format. I mean, just, you know, black green X in general. It's just play the best cards in the format.
Hey Harold, you're over there in Korea as well, right?
Yep, yes I am.
What is your meta down there as far as this standard format, and what are you going to
play? Well,
be playing?
Since I've been playing RELX's Abzan for the last, like, you know, a few days, and I really like it a lot. I was running Green-Red Devotion, Redux Green-Red Devotion at a GPT last week, and I just, you know, just got terrible draws. Everyone was pretty much playing Mardu, and there were a couple of control decks, but I definitely felt that since a couple of the Korean players have been, you know, putting up pretty good results, that a lot of the Korean players here in Korea are net decking off of the pro-Korean players. Like, for example, I went to a shop and played on Thursday, and it seemed like a lot of guys were playing the Korean guys' Mardu list. So that was definitely not a surprise for me to see that.
Anything you would change in your main deck as far as what you're playing right now?
Not really. I guess I'd have to play with the deck just a little bit more just to kind of get more experience with it. But overall, you know, the deck is great. I mean, yeah, RELX did a great job, you know, playing it. And, you know, I've watched his videos, you know, at the Pro Tour a few times and, you know, just trying to learn off of that. But, yeah, I definitely have to play with it more and maybe adjust it here and there. I mean, I'm not really sure exactly what would need to come out, what would need to go in. So,
you know, RELX is a funny guy because, like, watching him during the Pro Tour, it was just hilarious. The way he played each and every single game, he looked like he enjoyed it. Now, I mean, in the past, I've heard RELX is a douche, but just
he looked like he
what's that?
I've actually heard that too. Actually, he's kind of, some people are kind of put off by him.
Well, I think he tries to play a mind game, or at least from what I saw in that Pro Tour, I watched him. I don't think he's actually a douche. I think he plays a very good mind game because you saw how even while he was waiting for his opponent to make their plays, like especially when I was watching him against Yuya Watanabe, when it comes down to it, Yuya Watanabe is my favorite player of all time because I used to watch him when I first started playing Modern. It was because of Yuya Watanabe that I picked up Jund, and I've been playing I literally picked up the 75 then like a week and a half later after I picked up the full 75. Blood Elf got banned, so
yeah,
I wasn't too happy with that. But like I was saying, Yuya Watanabe versus RELX, and you could tell it wasn't more of him just being douchey. He was actually playing a mind game with Yuya. He would sit still for a second, then Yuya's thinking, and he's like staring Yuya down, knowing that Yuya. I mean, Japanese players in general. I don't know if you guys know this, but it's weird to have eye contact with a Japanese player. Correct? Chris?
So.
Man,
yeah,
I've heard they're actually very polite, especially like when they get thoughtsies or something. Like, I remember one of my buddies, Damien, was playing at like a GPT or something in Japan, and when he was like playing thoughtsies, the guy basically laid his hand out, and even though he had written everything down that was in his hand, the Japanese player basically kept his hand exposed to, you know, kind of show him that this is what he had, you know. But yeah, he was drawing cards, he kept them face down, but the cards that were thought seized, he kept them face up. And he was like, yeah, the Japanese players are really polite and all this stuff. So
yeah, I do the same thing when I get thought seized, or I'll separate it into cards that you can't, like with thought seized, I'll separate the hand into like the lands and then the cards you can take too.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of do the same thing too. Like if I notice that an opponent thought seized me, they don't like write anything down, I'll usually let them see what they thought seized, and all the other cards I draw, I just keep them face down, kind of, you know, off to the side.
I guess I'm kind of a douche then.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm all like, flip.
Hey, it depends on
you got it. Okay, flip back.
Hey, you don't pick. Yeah, you don't write it down. That's your fault. I'm picking them back up afterwards.
Yeah, I've kind of thought that too. Like, definitely when I'm like on a more competitive level, like if I'm playing for like a, you know, PTQ or something, I'll definitely, like, if they don't write it down, yeah, that's their fault. But if it's like a casual kind of FNM environment thing, yeah, sure, I'll keep my cards exposed. But, you know, if it's like definitely a high competitive thing, yeah, if they don't write it, then that's their fault.
So, you know who RELX reminds me of? Tyler. RELX is like a skinnier Tyler.
Oh man, Tyler's like a lot nicer. Like,
yes.
RELX does have this kind of like assholish demeanor, I guess.
Yeah, he kind of like, has that, like, aura, sort of, like, if you look at him.
Well, I'm just talking about the way that Tyler talks to you as you play. And he's like, come on, man. Yeah, I know you got it. Just play it. Yeah, so that's what I saw Aralax do. Now, on the stream, he actually caught a lot of flack. So if you keep up when you watch Twitch TV and you keep up with the stream on the side, Aralax caught a lot of flack, and he also caught a lot of flack on Twitter during the finals because people were just saying that he was acting like a jerk towards Sean McLaren.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the final match.
Yeah, what do you guys think about that? I didn't see anything particularly wrong with it. And then some other pro players actually came out and said that, you know, he was just having fun and that there should be no problem with that and that people need to just stop being so, I guess, touchy-feely about the whole thing. How do you guys feel about that?
Okay, so I guess it depends on how Sean McLaren feels, honestly. I mean, like I said, they both write for Star City. I mean, They're both Sean McLaren is still a lone wolf, but he writes for Star City on the regular and puts up videos for them, so they know each other at least. So I mean,
yeah, a lot of people seem to take offense to when they were waiting for that top card and what Sean had, and Aralax just said, "All right, just flip it," and then Sean was like, "No, I'm gonna go ahead and keep this." And you know, Sean was hamming it up too. I think you have to at least acknowledge that Sean McLaren was trying to build up, make it more tense. But specifically speaking, if he would have flipped it based on the card it was, if it would have been another card, he actually might have had an extra turn or two to keep going. And so it might not have ended the game. How do you guys feel about that? Because Aralax sure caught a lot of flack for that comment.
Well, I think it's mostly just because Aralax knew he was in a favorable position. I think, I mean, he was what, at 17 life, and Sean was at 4 or something. And I mean, and Ari had 2 Abzan charms in hand, so he knew that, like, if it was like a Mantis Rider, which it ended up being, he could just exile it and then put counters on his creatures and swing for exact damage. So I think he knew that he had the game in the bag, and he just wanted to see. Well, actually, no. Ari was at low life, and Sean was at 12 or something.
Right. What Sean needed was a strong burn spell to take him out. Like a Stoke the Flames would have taken out Aralax. But the creature he drew was no good because the fact that I think Aralax had 2 Wingmate Rocks out. Yeah, he had the Wingmate Rock and he had the token out. And because of that, it was enough to deal lethal, but it wasn't enough. But he couldn't get it through because of the Wingmate Rocks. Now, Sean McLaren had no idea that Aralax had 2 removal spells, but in Sean McLaren's mind, it still could have made a difference.
Guys, what I think it really comes down to, and we're saying a lot of he's getting flack, he looks like a douche, all this stuff. What it comes down to, and the reason why I think he's probably getting flack from a lot of people is because as a pro, and this is coming from a military mindset, but as a pro, obviously you're expected to have a certain type of demeanor, just like, hey, any officer has a certain type of demeanor, or any higher ranking individual has a certain type of demeanor. The same goes with a pro in that age, because you got us lower level players like us who just go to FNM. Then you got your guys who go to the pro tour, you got your platinum pro, your all those levels and whatnot. But in the end, I think it all just comes down to if you're known by a lot of people, it's just like any celeb status. It's nerd famous, basically, is what it comes down to. You still have to have a certain type of demeanor that promotes a healthy Magic the Gathering. Because when people are if I were just to come into Magic the Gathering and I'm watching the pro tour for the first time ever, and I'm seeing a guy who's acting like a douche right off the bat, am I really going to want to play this game? Because I'm going to be like in the back of my mind going, man, is this what I'm going to expect throughout the time that I'm playing Magic? I don't want to do this. You know what I mean? You just got to have that certain type of positive demeanor. And so I think that's probably why he's getting so much flack.
And I see that, but you know, how much is too much? Like, even a Flock plays with a permanent smirk on his face. And that can be pretty off-putting to some people, especially because he's a control player. So, you know, he could have a fistful of lands, but it looks like he has a fistful of counterspells. I know people that find that really off-putting. I mean, how much is too much? And what about having a bad guy in Magic? I actually heard this concept before that, you know, maybe we need like a pro we can hate. Just like we have in professional wrestling. Like, I would argue Conley Woods is the Mankind of the Magic community. And that, everybody remember Mankind from the WWF? You know, yeah. big chubby guy. You know, he used to get beat up all the time, and then out of nowhere, every once in a while, he would pull the win, and everybody just went nuts because you're like, oh my god, Mankind actually pulled it off, right? I think that's how Conley Woods is. You know, he's big, he's lovable, and then he doesn't do that well, but when he does, everybody goes, oh my god, Conley Woods won, right? Well, what about having like an Undertaker? What if Ariel X is the next Undertaker of the Magic community? I'm just saying, maybe that's a good thing.
Maybe. I mean, I don't think it's wrong. I mean, he had a lot of line. Like, Sean McLaren had already won a Pro Tour, had, you know, his Pro Tour top eight. That was Ari Lax's, like, you know, first Pro Tour top eight. And, you know, obviously his first Pro Tour win. So, I mean, some people, you know, get super excited and, you know, can't hold it in. I mean, that's just, everybody's different. I honestly don't think, you know, I don't hate him. I mean, like I said, I could see there's definitely people that are, you know, assholes in the world, and like, I mean, hey, sometimes they're funny. I mean, our good friend Mike White is definitely an asshole.
Yeah, that's true.
He's like one of my best friends. Like,
yeah, we gotta have him in the cast. And that's the thing is, you know, how much is too much? I mean, are we gonna have excessive celebration penalties in Magic now? Is that where we're going as a game, where the judge is gonna just throw a flag in the middle of the table and he's gonna say, oh, excessive celebration. I'm sorry, it's gonna have a 3-life penalty.
Well, I don't really think there's going to be like something like that, but I think most of the guys at that level, they know, you know, when to like, you know, celebrate or, you know, jump for joy or whatever. I mean, it's just kind of, I mean, because you got to think about being on the receiving end of that also. I mean, how do you feel if someone's like top deck something awesome and, you know, just kind of rubs it in your face, you know, especially when you could have potentially won.
And you know what, I definitely see that. And if he, let's say that I top deck something, right, and then I literally, you know, just rub it in that face and go, in your face, I got the burn spell, right? But what about just celebrating a winner? And that's what I think that we need to make a clear distinction, where if a guy top decks something amazing, I remember during, I think it was a year or two ago, during the World Magic Cup, when they top deck a Rakdos return, and even Richard Hagan, he went insane, and he was screaming, "It's a Rakdos return! It's a Rakdos return!" Like, it was like the most miraculous touchdown that had ever happened, right? Or you know, it was a grand slam, and that just barely made it for that team to win the World Series, and it seemed like a big deal, and I bet the other team wasn't too happy that Arakdos' return was top decked. But you gotta admit that was a dramatic moment. It was exciting. I was jumping up and down on my chair. I think that type of coverage, that type of moments, I think it would make Magic more watchable to a lot more people.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I love how Rich Hagan and Brian David Marshall are. That particular reaction, oh my god, he did it. He top decked what he needed. I don't even know if that's and that's not even close to an English accent, but anywho.
It sounds like Austin Powers.
Do you feel Randy, baby?
No, that's honestly, that's why I like the Star City Games coverage, especially with like Cedric and, you know, like they make it fun to watch, you know. Sometimes it gets, you know, and I mean, like, sometimes it gets pretty dry and boring when you're watching this stuff, and, like, you just need something to kind of, you know, break the monotony. Especially, like I said, that's why I stopped watching, like, the standard, you know, when Theros was out, because, one, it was so boring, but there was just, you know, a lot of the GP commentary was just, I don't know, just was boring.
Yeah, and the question is, I understand Magic is a very technical game, and for some people, you do want to know the interactions, because, like me, I like watching Magic coverage because at least I pretend that I'm getting better while I'm doing it. So I definitely want to understand the plays. But there is something to be said, you know, why don't we get the guy with the cowboy hat from WWF to narrate Magic matches?
Good old GR.
Yeah, I think that'd be pretty interesting, you know. And then every once in a while, you could throw, you know, cards at him or something, you know, or the equivalent of throwing a wrestler at the dude, you know. That's actually the wrestler always lands in the Spanish speakers commentator. That's what
I've noticed. Yeah, that's true. I've noticed that too. It's like, yeah, their stuff always gets like demolished.
Yeah, if you speak Spanish and you're commentating in the WWF, you know, you might as well just show up with padding.
Yeah.
So speaking of standard, the deck that I chose to go with, and in this past, I've said with our last few podcasts, I fell out of standard. I started playing a lot more modern and legacy. The events are held here, and as a matter of fact, now that FNM is becoming in a full format type of thing. I'm thinking FNM Legacy. This is going to be nuts. This is actually going to be fun. But I fell out of standard and just didn't know what I wanted to play. Last format wasn't fun for me, so I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to play at all. Come around Khans of Tarkir, and I knew it from the start. As soon as I started seeing spoilers, I was like, man, they put the fetch lands out there. I was like, it's going to happen. I'm going to get back into standard. I've got almost 3 modern decks, 2 legacy decks, but no standard decks. And I was just like, I guess, you know, I'm pretty set on what I have for modern and legacy. Let's get back into standard. So, needless to say, I watched one of the first few SCGs opens, and Jeskai Temple just seemed to be there. And please, I am not calling it Jeskai Wins, okay? I don't care what anyone else says. I am not, and I said it on our Facebook page, I am not going with Jeskai Wins. I will just call it.
Wow, even your wife supports that. That's it's pretty passionate.
She's definitely on that.
She's like, you go, baby! Take that down.
I mean, technically, it's not tempo either. Like, it plays, you know, Jeskai Charm is the only card that generates tempo. Mm-hmm. It should just be like Jeskai, you know, I don't know.
Just Jeskai, period.
Yeah,
kind of like how there's just Jun, so you can just say Jeskai.
Yeah. Jeskai.deck, you know? I'm just. But yeah, I went with Jeskai. And the big thing is, I'm going to keep going with Jeskai, even if it's an under-favored, archetype deck, because you've got 2 different decks you can pull from it. One week I can go with the Jeskai dot deck or Jeskai period, and then I can go into Jeskai combo the next week just by taking out a few cards and adding a few cards, because I have everything I need for both decks. So, I mean, break that monotony of just playing that regular Jeskai and go into combo so that people, they expect you to play regular Jeskai 1 week, but then out of nowhere you're coming with combo and they're just getting dirtled. You know what I mean?
Well, even then, the Jeskai Wind / Temple deck, it has the ability to turn to a control deck post-sideboard, and that's pretty cool.
Hi. I've been playtesting it for the past week and a half, and hopefully this Sunday I can have the full 75, because I'm still waiting on a few cards. I've been having trouble getting my red-blue scries here on Island, so I've been having to use makeshift, the little blue-red gain 1 life land from Khans, and obviously gaining 1 life is cool, but scrying is better, obviously. But yeah, so I'm going to stick with Jeskai. What about you, Chris? I haven't heard your deck you're particularly using.
I actually have 2 standard decks built, which is the Abzan Midrange and the Jeskai deck. I'm letting Sean borrow one of my decks, and he hasn't decided which one he's using. But he and his girlfriend Christine went to FNM on Friday, and his girlfriend Christine was playing the mono black deck that Sean and I kind of built together. And they took first and second out of, I think, 24 people.
Yeah, those two are really moving up in the Magic world. I remember when they first started playing, they had that super casual, like, yeah, I used to play this in high school and I'm getting back on. But those two are just exploding lately.
Yeah, and then because we had a bunch of random drafts that we did, and then the 3 of us would always take like first, second, third in the drafts too. So I think whichever deck Sean decides not to use, because because I have both decks almost completely built. The only thing I need to change is maybe add a Sarkon to the main deck for the Jeskai deck. But I think Abzan's a stronger deck, so I might choose that. But I like the way Jeskai plays better, if that makes any sense. Like, it's more of my play style, more the, like, I feel good when I use these cards kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, beating down with a bunch of big creatures and occasional removal.
Right. What about you, Will?
Well, I told you about that black red midrange deck I was playing. I actually just built an Abzan midrange deck. Pretty much it's not anybody's exact list, but I mean, I'm playing cards that I like, and I still haven't decided. I mean, right now while we've been doing this podcast, I've been, you know, drawing sample hands and testing it out, and it seems to be pretty good. So we'll see how that goes.
Cool.
Oh. A notable thing I'm trying to do maybe with the Jeskai deck is, because it has the ability to turn into a control deck, I was thinking, I don't know if I'm going to run it, but maybe at least try out Pearl Lake Ancient or something somewhere there and see how that goes. Because it is resilient to removal, but the problem with it is, unlike
mono black, the removal's not as good. So I don't know if it's going to be as good of a card. But then for the Abzan, I'm trying out... Well, Ari Lax, I think, was the only top 8 person that used Nissa's. But I'm going to try her out one main and one side just because I think she's still really good. And, her, you know, you have to answer her within 2 or 3 turns or you just lose.
Yep, that is true. For me, like I was talking about earlier, I'm really cheap, so I hate buying into Standard when the new season comes out. So I first built the blue-white deck that Tom Ross put out on SCG. And that one plays. I mean, it wins out of nowhere. It definitely catches you with your pants down. But like we were talking about,
That is true. I've lost to this deck many times.
But if you draw the wrong half of it, it's just miserable. So that's – I think we're going to – and this – Dan, you know what I'm talking about. I'm gonna go with the mono red build that just goes wide. Just play a bunch of little guys and just slam in.
That's what I did the first weeks when cons came out. And I liked it. It was a fun deck. Goblin Rabble Master is insane. So
well, what's cool is the blue white heroic deck. That deck cost me 17 cents to put together because I just went into my binder and I pulled everything out because most of it was commons and uncommons. So that was pretty cool. And then the red deck, I'm just gonna take last season's red deck and just swap out some of the commons and uncommons. And I think I have to pick up 4 Eidolon of Rebels for the sideboard. And other than that, I think the rest of the deck is just commons and uncommons. So. I'm liking that a lot, but I think eventually I'm definitely trying to build into Abzan aggro. I just tend to like that deck. It has a lot of removal. It's very resilient, and it just seems it has that feeling that most Jund decks have, that there's no such thing as a bad top deck with that deck.
Wait, you're gonna add Eidolon and the Great Revel to blue white heroic deck?
No, he's making a mono red deck.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. I was confused for a second.
Yeah, it's
way
it's,
over the head on that one.
Yeah, it's for the sideboard. It goes out in some of the matchups. I think it's supposed to go in against the more controlling matchups. I think that's where you bring it in.
Or any matchup that you have, like where your opponent has a bunch of removal.
Yeah.
Because it makes them have to spend, you know, pay life to kill. You know, you just get some more. You get some incremental value. You take out some of your other two drops. I don't know. I like mono red.
One of my favorite cards in last season's mono red deck was the Fire Fist Striker, and I didn't pay much attention to M14. But there's actually a card that's even better now. There's that 1/1 goblin that whenever it attacks, target creature can't block. Oh, that's so good.
I think you have to pay a red to make it not block, right?
Yeah, yes. But you don't have to trigger battalion.
Yeah, that's true.
And against a lot of these decks that are playing a lot of removal, because that's what used to happen last season. Sometimes I would sandbag that Fire Fist Striker just because I didn't want to get a kill. Then I would wait just right to where I could attack with it so I can trigger it. But this one, I think I can. It's a one drop. I can get it out in turn one. Opponents will probably not pay that much attention to it until I say pay one. Your creature can't block, or Siege Rhino can't block. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's why. Like right now, I'm thinking about my sideboard choices, and especially against Siege Rhino and cards like Fleece Mane Lion as well as Ramaz, you know, putting in Nyx Fleece Ram just blocks and does better if I'm just going to try to stabilize myself as well as make it to where they cannot get over it. I mean, a 0/5, obviously these four power creatures just can't get there against that. So,
I tell you, Nyx Fleece Ram, I think it's a pretty good card. I think it has the potential, if it sees more play, to be as expensive as Stoke the Flames, just because of...
It's already
$2.
Yeah, it's not $5, though.
Yeah, I just wish...
Stoke will drop, though.
Yeah, I yesterday I swapped out 3 Mythics for 3 Stoke the Flames. It was so painful.
Stoke the Flames is December FNM promo.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It reminds me, I still need to find me some... I need to find me some of the Banishing Lights, man. These cards are getting harder and harder on Island to find. My wife just bought me 9 packs of Journey, and literally, I didn't pull a single one.
That's what I'm saying. Uncommons are starting to become the new mythic
rares. Yeah, it's starting to become like a pain to get. Because I had people texting me about, hey, do you have any Secret of the Ways? I'm like, yeah, let me look. I expected to have at least like 5 or 6. I had like 3.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because not a lot of people save them. Everybody thinks they have them when they really don't. The card I'm looking for right now is Monastery Swift Spear. I'm holding one in my hand right now, and there's a box of cons where there's probably one more. It seems like the chase uncommons, there only seems to be about one per box on average. And that's a lot. You know, that's not a lot when you consider you're paying anywhere from $100 to $110 just for one chase uncommon. Now you get other cards, but you know what I'm saying.
I don't know. I seem to open a lot of those, though. I have like 10 Swift Spears that I can actually see right now.
Wow, that's insane.
I have 5 or 6 too.
But I've opened a fair amount of cons, but I think definitely that I've opened more of this card than any other card ever. I think I've opened 10 Flooded Strands.
Oh, that's good.
Cool. Yeah.
But see, and that's what I'm saying. I think that the fetch lands right now are still in the 15 to 20 range. I think as time goes by, they're going to drop to 10. There's just so much cons products that's being opened, and they're rares. So
they're going to drop lower than that.
Yeah. Well, look at the shock lands.
Well, but you have to consider shock lands are only played in modern. They're not really played in legacy, whereas fetch lands are also played in legacy. And another thing to keep in mind is, though, yeah, there are some that are being opened a lot, but I've seen people who have opened boxes that have opened only maybe like 0 or 1 or 2 fetches only.
Yeah.
I've seen people open 0 fetches in boxes.
And it's funny because the what seems to be the easiest fetches to find right now are Polluted Deltas and Flooded Strands, which, you know,
which are the ones that are worth money in Legacy.
Or the top, you know, the top modern and, well, I'm sure they'll be the top modern staples. Man, blue is such a dominant color in the older formats that, but like I said, like, you look in someone's binder and they're like me, I have like 3 or 4 extra Flooded Strands. And
really?
Yeah.
All right. I'll be coming your way soon.
Yeah, I need Bloodstained Myers and Windswept Heats.
I'm trying to finish up because I have two. I'm trying to get the old art freaking Onslaught Fetches because I'm so close. I'm only 3 Windswept Heats and then 2 Flooded Strands, and then I have all of, you know, all my fetch lands will be Onslaught.
See, that's how I feel because I really feel like my Polluted Delta. I had 3 Onslaught ones, 1 new one, and it pains me to see them together. I wanted Onslaught one.
Yeah, well, lucky for me, I already had 4 Deltas, but and I said I had most, you know, because of Legacy, I had a lot of the other fetch lands, but I never picked up Windswept Heats because I had no reason to play them.
Yep.
And I never really picked up Flooded Strands because, like, they were expensive.
Yeah, luckily I have a playset of Flooded Strands, and I'm very happy to have my Onslaught Flooded Strands.
But yeah, like I said, trying to find I only need two Flooded Strands and then 2 Windswept Heats, and then I'll, like I said, all of them will be Onslaught. But I mean, I have all of my Onslaught fetches right now. I just, like I said, I'd rather just get them all in the old art while I can.
Yeah. Now, then, since we're talking about Legacy, okay, so Legacy at FNM, I think that's bad. I know a lot of people are excited, but let's be honest. Is that really healthy for the game in the long term? And I don't even think stores are going to do it that often. And the reason I'm saying this is I'm looking at the current scene out here in Korea. Korea is struggling to get Modern and Legacy off the ground. And I think
that's for sure. I mean, the cards are definitely harder to get because, you know, after they stopped printing them in Korean like so many years ago, they started getting more Korean product. Standard's definitely like the big thing here. I mean, Modern's picking up a little bit, but Standard's definitely like what people are playing here because they can get cards in Korean.
And I mean, I think it's fine. I don't think Legacy should be played at FNM every week, but it's all dependent on the community you're at. Like, on this island, there's a healthy amount of Legacy players that would probably, you know, like to play Legacy. Like, right now, playing Legacy once a month is pretty hard. Like, it sucks, you know. I have to, like, I literally, like, clear out my schedule so I can go play Legacy once a month. And
like, once in a while here, but it's, like, once every couple of months or something, and Modern's, like, it's been picking up to about once a month, which is pretty good. Because I started playing Modern, and I love Modern. Modern's awesome.
We've definitely brought up the Modern game here. Like, Modern is played every week, like, at the card shop here. But, again, it's, you know, actually for a while there, because of how stale Standard was, that, like, the card shop was only doing Modern tournaments because nobody wanted to play Standard.
Yep, that's true. Uh-huh.
I think the problem, too, is that Well, at least for here, because we're gonna have standard legacy, and there's gonna be other sanctioned formats. But I mean, let's be honest, guys. Zero and card box is kind of small, both. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I think if we try to have all three of those formats, there's not gonna be enough room. We barely
well,
have.
They'd only do formats. Two. They only do like well. They'll only do two different formats a night. Like, and that's they've been doing that. Like, Cardbox usually does draft and standard. And, you know, Zeros does, you know, standard and modern. But, like, what will happen is she'll switch out the modern. I'm sure they'll keep standard every week, and I think they should. Is what she'll do is 1 week, instead of playing modern, it'll be, like, legacy or, you know, some other format. And I think that's fine. It gives people a new chance to see cards and, you know, look at interactions. And, like I said, I spent, like, you know, I have, like, thousands of dollars in, you know, legacy cards. I would like to, you know, let them see the playmat and, you know, tap my dual lands for mana every once in a while.
And I think it is going to depend on the particular meta. Not the meta, but just how the local stores are set up. Because I can see a lot of stores in the States where telling people that you're going to start hosting Legacy, what's going to end up happening is that not enough people are going to show up to play Legacy. And then everybody that shows up to play Standard is just going to feel completely alienated. And then they're probably going to end up playing Standard anyway. It just seems to me like FNM is supposed to be for the beginner. And when you start putting in formats, I mean, Modern, it's kind of a stretch. I mean, but once you start putting Legacy or Rochester Draft or some of the more wacky formats that not a lot of people play, that just you're just asking for people to get alienated and just show up on a Friday night and be like, this is what we're playing. Well, I can't play that.
Well, then, I mean, that is up to the store owners. I mean, I like what Wizards did is they gave the store owners free reign to, you know, let people play. Because sometimes, you know, sometimes people want to play other things. And again, it's all going to depend on your area and what the metagame and what, you know, kind of cards people have.
Yeah, that is true.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Zeros is probably going to capitalize on that because there are a lot of people who do play Legacy as well. I don't think Cardbox is going to, because those are people who are just standard people, and then so occasionally they'll do a draft as well. So, because they don't even do Modern.
Yeah.
No. And I mean, that's cool. I mean, you have these two card shops where Cardbox is, you know, a lot of the, you know, junior people getting into playing Magic, you know, go there and they learn and they build decks. And I mean, it's pretty, the standard metagame has gotten pretty competitive. And then even the draft, I think that the drafting over at Cardbox actually has better, you know, limited players than it when Zeros has drafts. I mean, just because they do it more often. I mean, I guess Zeros has the weekly draft, but...
So I'm looking at Monastery Swift Spear right now. And Chris, you're more of an art person than I am, but apparently it was drawn by Steve Argyle.
Okay.
And I'm literally thinking like, wow, Monastery Swift Spear actually has too much clothes on for a Steve Argyle picture.
I actually looked at her. I think her hairstyle is really interesting too. Because if you look closely,
yeah, that really stands out. She's got cornrows going on.
Yeah, and
that's,
I think
that's
it's
like
actually,
Okinawa style.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be. I actually have to look at the card a little bit more closely, but I think it's. It's not something I usually like stand or I see standing out from Steve Argyle. But usually the only art that I can look at and point out almost immediately is Raven Swanland. You can always tell if he did that card.
Which card?
Like cards that are done by Raven Swanland because he has that certain style. Like I'm looking at Lightning Helix right now, the one with the Johnny, and you can tell it's Raven Swanland art.
Huh. Well, that and the Foglios, which are not allowed to do magic anymore, apparently.
Eh?
Yeah, Steve Foglio and I think it's a Kalia Foglio. No, Mike Foglio? I forget. Well, the Foglios, they have a very cartoonish. If you look at Orcish Librarian, they just show a really cartoonish-looking orc eating a book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's that type of style. Or, you know what? Let's see what's the name of that. Show and Tell. Show and Tell is definitely a Foglio card.
Yeah, but I think the cards had wackier art and back then anyway, like if you look at it in general as opposed to now, a lot of them tend to be really serious.
Yeah, they're going for a photorealistic feel, it seems.
But I'm looking at Monastery of Swift Spear right now. There's a lot of, I don't know, clash in the art too, because what's her leg doing? It looks like one of her legs is like propped up and the other one's like back or something.
Non-existent? Yeah, it's not even there.
Yeah.
See, that's what I'm saying. Maybe... He doesn't draw skin and he completely messes it up.
And then her hair is a little bit too wacky too, because most of them, you know, they have the the ponytail kind of thing, but hers is, like, jagged. It goes, like, 90 degrees and then 90 degrees again. I don't know, it just... I mean, I like the art overall, but it's just a little bit too weird for me. I think maybe it's supposed to be because she's moving so fast, but then you don't see any, like, you know,
movement,
like, motion of her actually moving. Yeah, moving fast.
Cool, cool. All right, so is there any other topics you guys want to talk about before we head out?
I don't think so.
Think we can
not that I can think of.
Okay. All right. So probably within the next week or two, this is just a sneak peek for our listeners. We're going to be doing a full Seoul metagame / venue rundown. So what we're going to do is we're going to have Harold back, and we're going to have Paul join us on the podcast, and we're going to talk about what it's like to play in Korea, where you can play, where to go, the names of the shops, and just give you some good advice for if you find yourself in Seoul, how to make sure that you can get yourself a good game. And this is going to be a series that we're going to be bringing to you, where we're just going to talk to different people from all over the world, and we're going to ask them, when we come to your town, how can we play Magic? So stay tuned. It's a special feature that we're bringing just for you, and I hope that you can join us. Will, you have contact information?
Yeah, like always, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on the Traveling Mages Facebook page. That's about it for me.
Dan, any contact information?
Same as well. Facebook, Traveling Mages, G&G Alters on Facebook, as well as my Instagram, which is Galaxy Alters. Yep, that's it for me.
All right, cool. Harold, do you have anywhere you can be reached at? Any?
Yeah, same. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You know, basically just the usuals.
What's your Twitter handle?
Off the top of my head, it should. Oh, hold on, I gotta look it up. it is. At Harold Wheeler 3.
Cool, cool. All right. Chris?
Facebook. I'm also on the Traveling Mages, and I also have the Skype that we're using right now, and then I guess Line too.
Cool, cool. And if you want to reach Randy, his contact information definitely is on the last episode where we interviewed him. If you can go back and listen to his pre-Pro Tour expectations, and you can compare him to how he did afterwards. We're actually really proud of him. Now, for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Jose, J-O-S-E, _LUIS_LIY. You know, now that I think about it, it's a little long, so I probably should come up with something better. But oh well. Thanks for listening to us. Hopefully you can join us next week, where we'll be discussing Seoul and anything else going on in the Magic community. Thanks for listening.
Bye.